the second episode.
Hold on.
Oh. Okay. Sorry.
Now you can go.
Hey, welcome to Kristen and Chill. It's the second episode back, and I'm still trying to decide if it's going to be worth it or not. Allie Breen will make or break this show, yeah, whether I
no pressure.
Keep doing it or not. But I am glad to be back. I did a live stream with some people who used to listen to the show.
Okay.
Which felt nice. It was like catching up with old friends. But I can turn into like an emotional mess. Like, as you've seen, I feel like it's now like, it was never in the closet, but like, I just feel like everyone knows like, oh, she like cries all the time.
Aww.
But I did this live stream and we were doing it for like 4 hours.
Wow.
Which was kind of insane.
Wow.
So I'm kind of saying that just for people who want a little bit more of an intimate show. Yeah. It's on YouTube, but then I only put it back on Patreon for people who don't watch it live. But anyway, like a really kind of dark there.
And so here the Patreon is the place for darkness.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If you want to cry, go to Patreon. Here, yeah. Maybe we'll cry just a little. Yeah. We'll see.
And like my darkness is so light, it's lame. Like anyone who's actually really dark would look at mine and be like, oh, she's a pussy.
Right. You're not like worshiping Satan or doing any of the things that really dark people do.
Right. Like if anything, I'm holding up my crucifix. Right. Being like, just what surround me in white light. So...
you're fighting the darkness.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, did you just see the people are going crazy over the Super Bowl? Like Ice Spice supposedly did like satanic.
Yeah, I saw that.
Is that a real thing?
You know, I don't know. I actually saw someone who said, I don't know who it was. I don't know the Bible that well, which I should because I'm wearing a crucifix. And I actually have like a thing about like Lent right here, which is weird. I guess there was some. I don't know if it was an apostle or somebody who put the cross upside down on because he did something wrong and felt like it was dishonor to wear the cross up. Or no, it was something
like
punishing
himself.
He was hung upside down on the cross.
Oof.
So the cross was upside down. And I don't know who it was. So some people were saying it's not a satanic thing to have an upside down cross. It was like, but I'd have to, I retain nothing. I just read this like 2 days ago.
That's hilarious. That's how I am too. I have to listen to things. Or well, if I read something, maybe I can get it. But I listen to everything now. I have to go back and listen like 9 times.
Yeah.
Because you get distracted.
Right.
But and people are like, obsessed with those Satan symbols, like especially in Hollywood. They act like everyone's a Satan worshiper.
Yeah.
Well, as child's blood.
As we know, they are because we are very famous Hollywood people.
A big part of that circle.
But she did do like a weird finger symbol.
I thought that's what they were talking about as the satanic stuff.
Yeah, so it was that and then the upside down cross.
Right.
Honestly, to me, what the most satanic part was just the hairstyle. It was like a Ronald
orphan
McDonald.
Annie. Yeah, yeah. That's a better
that's evil.
Actually depiction of it. Yeah, that's pretty pretty wrong.
Right. If you're willing to look that bad, then like, I feel like Satan's involved.
You need God in your life.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. There's some evil forces.
Yeah. We just rush at her with a Bible, and she thinks it's her upside-down cross, but I just put it on her head for her hair. So this is Allie Breen. I didn't say your full name.
Okay.
But everybody knows you.
Yeah. Very well known.
Yes. And we were talking before the show, and I was just saying, you know, to talk about anything, I'd want to like talk about your neuroses or stuff that you overthink, but I feel like that's not really something that you do too much of.
Yeah, I tend to not. I can block stuff out pretty easily if I have like an embarrassing moment, or there's some stuff I harp on, but now I mostly find it funny, and I would struggle with like, should I try to fix this? And I don't really like one. This is so ridiculous and so embarrassing, but over the summer I did a show in Southampton. It's like through the West Side Comedy Theater. And the guy who runs the theater meets you outside. He's so great and like gracious. And lately, like people have been telling me I look like the blonde girl on Law & Order SVU. And so
I watch good TV, so I have no idea what she looks like.
Yeah. I don't know her name. And I should look it up because I've been told enough times. But she's not really that well known. But yeah, I've gotten that a couple times. And I was like, oh, interesting. And he goes, why? You look surprised. Who do you usually get? And I said, this is so I can't even believe I'm repeating this because I was like, oh, well, I was really young. First of all, I'd been driving. I like didn't even take a shower. I looked like hell. And so that makes it even funnier because I was like, when I was younger, people would say Gwyneth Paltrow or Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, and I can see that.
Oh, my God. But can you imagine saying that to someone? Being like, usually I get the most beautiful stars. And then, like, we just kept talking. And it wasn't until, like, 20 minutes later when I left, I was like, wait, did I seriously just tell him? And it was hilarious because I feel like it registered. I feel like it was like, oh, okay. Like, yeah. What?
Yeah.
And then I was literally like, because we'd been texting, I was like, should I be like, hey, I didn't mean to tell you that I look like the top act. Like, it's like, I don't know where. And then I just laugh about it now. But that would be something that would stress me out.
Yeah.
So much for so long. And I was like, I wonder if he's repeating that to me. Like, this, because I always ask when I go to a place, like, who are, like, the worst comics you've dealt with? Or, like, what's something? And then he's like, she was nice, but this bitch thought that she looked like, she thought she was, like, Margot Robbie over here.
You're selling vagina candles.
Yes, exactly. That's what I should start to do. Be like, no, I do look like Gwyneth. I emulate.
Well, now I'm having a neurotic episode because I realize that I do that. And, you know, it's like you think you're self-aware and then you realize you're not as self-aware as you are.
Yeah.
Because I occasionally will get Courtney Cox or Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, I can see those.
But see, I'm being an asshole right
now.
That's
hilarious. Like,
but people will say, you know, you look like somebody. And I'll say, oh, well, it's usually Jennifer Connelly or Courtney Cox. Like, I give them the option.
Yes.
And I maybe don't even anymore. And maybe I'm, like, getting old and my looks are changing or something. But I've done that shamelessly. And now I'm realizing what
that's
an asshole
hilarious.
I sounded like. And then especially if they don't think it.
Yeah.
Like if
when
you're
they
like,
go back and they're like, ooh, the ego on that girl. Yeah. My God.
Usually I get Cindy
you
Crawford.
Do though, actually. Yeah. Like in the 90s, Cindy Crawford. You know, like
before
the,
I shaved my mole.
Like, yeah. And I think there's stuff like that that I do fairly often that I think I used to harp on. But at this point, maybe it's just that I have a bad memory too. Like nothing really gets me that neurotic anymore.
Yeah. Do you think it's a comic's personality to have these thoughts, or do people, regular people, quote unquote, are they thinking about these things, overthinking, or is it just a sect of people like us that I come across that do this? I don't know if this is normal or
I not. Think it's normal. I think, too, because one of the things that comics tend to do, especially on podcasts, is like, well, as a comic, and as comics, and no one else can do comedy but comics and comics.
I sound like an asshole again.
No.
Like, as a comic, as a Jennifer Connelly comic.
I feel like everything you're saying, I'm like, no, stop being it. No, that's it's like, to an extent, I mean, we are comics, so we can talk as comics about what we do, but I guess it's more the people who just think that only comics can have such like nuance in their thinking and can be, you know, the whole thing about like, well, only certain people can be comics. It's like only certain people are crazy enough to be comics. Cause I know a lot of regular people that in real life are way more fun,
really fun
to hang out with and funny.
Yeah.
But comics sit and work on it. And so it's like that person wouldn't think like, oh, this story just did really well at this party. I'm going to fly to Minnesota and see if this story does well there. Like,
I know.
That's
I mean,
a crazy person.
Yeah,
that's what we are.
The level of narcissism is insane. But then at the same time, the self-hatred level, I think, is kind of insane, too.
Well, because I think we like, it's like who can put up with bombing and get back out and doing it again?
Yeah.
So, right, we like the hatred, the self-hatred too. I think we probably revel in both things.
Yeah. I know. I feel like it is a little bit of a cliche conversation, but are we, is it confidence that gets you on stage, or is it the need to not feel the self-hatred because you get applauded by the audience and that's why you get on stage?
Yeah. It's probably a combination of both because you have a lot of the comics that go up and don't do well and they're like, fuck you, that was funny. That was just for me, you know? Or they actually
You're mocking
mad.
Me again.
And like, that's what I end all my jokes with.
This is literally every line I say, you're calling out.
But also the ones who think that, you know, that they're not there to make people laugh. They're there to do something profound or like
God.
Or preach or something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you can make a blanket statement what everyone's getting out of it. I like to make people laugh and have fun. And I do like stuff that you wouldn't think people would laugh at, that some people are going to laugh at, other people might not. But I'm never trying to offend anyone or, like, teach them.
Yeah. I've never talked to you about your desire to do comedy. Like, where did that come from? When did you start? Why did you start? Were you, like, funny as a younger person? Because you're not now.
Yeah. You're like, no one's ever said that you're funny. Yet you keep going on. It's a combination, I guess, because... No, it was, I loved theater when I was a kid.
Oh, you did? I never knew that.
I loved it. And I still do. Like, I see everything. I just can't sit. Like, my voice is terrible. I lose it all the time. I can't sing. I'm tone deaf. So when I moved to New York, I thought that I'd get a job, like, working as, I was doing copyright editing during the day after college.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I went to school for copywriting. For
advertising. That's funny. I went for political science, but you can't do anything that.
I went to this, like, secondary, not secondary. It was a postgraduate thing. After you graduate college, you go to, like, ad schools, but they're not accredited. They're basically just like a certificate scam, kind of. Not even. It's just so you can network with professionals.
That might
in
actually
advertising.
Be better, even though that's considered a scam. That's probably more useful.
It is because
you actual college.
That's basically how you get a job. Yeah.
Well, that it was fun. It was fine, but I was like at night. I didn't have like. A big social life. I wanted to see shows. I didn't know a lot of people in the city. I was like, I'll try to get a job working at a Broadway theater and I can just see everything.
Oh, wow.
And I just got a resume and I walked through Broadway handing out resumes and I walked by Caroline's and I was like, are you guys hiring? And I had seen a little bit of comedy.
Oh, you waited tables at Caroline's.
Yeah. Yep. Ah. I had seen a little bit of comedy and I liked it. I didn't grow up with stand-up comedy at all. And the funny thing is my dad, who I ended up not getting along very well with eventually, was like, when we were in therapy as a family at one point, and he like couldn't say anything nice about me. Oh, he was like, well, she's funny. So I guess maybe that played into it. I've never been like, that's the reason though.
Right.
But I walked by, I handed out my resume and the guy who was upstairs, I'm like, are you guys hiring? He's like, I don't know, let's go downstairs and see. And we went downstairs and he goes, are we hiring?
I feel like that's a euphemism for something else.
Yeah. Let's go downstairs and I followed. And I was like, he's like, it's still so just give you a quick audition. And then we went downstairs and he said to the manager, whoever he is, are we hiring? And the guy's like, yeah, sure. And he just took my resume and he's like, can you come in tomorrow? We'll give you an outfit or whatever. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I went in and then like 3 months later or something, the guy who managed the place, his name was Johnny Walker. He was like, how do you know Andrew Fox? And I was like, I don't. Who's that? He's like, Andrew Fox, the guy who got your job, Caroline's boyfriend. And I was like, what?
Oh.
And he goes, he's the guy who walked you down. And I was like, oh, that was just a guy that right. walked me downstairs. Right. He's like, oh, my God. The only reason we hired you, we thought that he was telling you. Yeah, are telling us to hire
you. We thought you were Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, exactly. We're like, Cameron Diaz has fallen on hard times. She wants to cocktail waitress at Caroline's. So yeah, I was just weirdly lucky. And that's apparently a really hard job to get. So
yeah, I can't imagine. I had a super hard time getting a job at a barbecue restaurant in Chicago.
Yeah.
Like, I literally waited, I think it was probably 3 months.
I think New York's worse for, like, waiting tables or bartending. And, I mean, none of the Broadway theaters called me back. I was so lucky. And so then, I, like, fell in love with comedy.
Yeah.
I had never been around it so much.
That's an incredible thing. When you think about being rejected from Broadway, it's usually being rejected because you're not great at singing or dancing or something like that. But it's just a basic rejection off of
bartending.
Yeah,
pretty much. I was like, I couldn't make it on Broadway as an usher or a bartender or any. I would have taken any job on Broadway.
But it's amazing that you can be rejected in other ways on Broadway. Yeah. I never thought of that before.
It runs deep. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's also hilarious that comedy is still the fallback. Right. Comedy is everyone's fallback for everything. It's like actors who are struggling. They're like, I'll just do comedy.
I know.
Yeah.
And then they can be surprisingly good at it, which is weird. I mean, some are obviously there's some terrible, but it's a surprising thing to just randomly decide to do and then also be able to do successfully sometimes.
Yeah. I think so much of it's about stage presence. And then if you happen to be able to write as well, all the better.
Did you see an open mic or something after work? Or did you just go up at Caroline's?
No. Yeah, I never went up at Caroline's while I was working there. I saw great comedy. I saw amazing comedy. And then the worst, like, open mics. Although there it wasn't open mics. It was like a new talent show. It was bringer shows. Equally bad. But they had a full audience at least. So it kind of went from like, oh my God, I could never do that, to the people who are, you know, headliners, to like, oh, I could do better than that. Like the guys who are doing the bringer shows. And then I just started writing for like years and years, and never thought about doing it. And eventually, like, I became friends with some comics and I told them that I wanted to try it. And I did some weird sports show. They were like looking for females to tape in like a fake studio with a fake audience. And that was like my first experience doing stand-up comedy.
Oh, that's random.
Which was really weird. I just wrote a bunch of jokes and they basically have a fake crowd and play a laugh track, so it looks like you're killing.
So it's amazing.
Like, this isn't bad at all. Like, this
would be perfect for Instagram times.
Like, oh my God. Now. Yeah, that would be. I'm surprised no one's done that. Yeah. I think someone has.
I'm sure they have.
There's like a soundstage comic in LA.
Oh.
Yeah. I can't remember his name, or I'd say it's bizarre. He basically tapes just with a curtain and a spotlight and does his thing. And I was looking through the comments because someone told me about it. And I was like, it's really hard to tell. But if you know, you can start to figure out. And some of the comments are like, this dude is on a soundstage.
Okay, so you can tell.
Yeah, but it takes, he's managed to get like hundreds of thousands. I think he's like over 100,000.
Wow.
Yeah, I have to find his name. I'll show it to you.
Yeah,
it's
and
crazy.
Send me his number.
Yeah, I know. That guy should actually start a school. You don't need to go to comedy school anymore. You need to go to like comedy soundstage school.
Yeah, I'm surprised that's really not a commercial thing.
It will be, for sure. You won't even need it. Like, with AI, you won't need it at all.
I keep rejecting the idea of AI. I'm in denial about it. Like, because my job is teaching guys how to talk to girls.
Right.
And there's all these bots now that are, like, giving them good lines to use and stuff on dating apps. So it's like I'm being
edged out by AI.
Yeah, like, you know, things you can see eventually going by the wayside. Like, of course, obviously, we don't predict technology, but with DVDs or VHS tapes, obviously, like, no one thought about Netflix coming or something. And then my dad owned a video store.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was a video store / pizzeria / grocery store.
That's actually amazing growing up. That would be perfect.
He has not past that level of genius since that point. Like, that was as high as he's ever thought.
That's pretty good for our childhood. That's perfect.
Yeah, he would come home with bags and bags of chips and candy and pizza and wings
movies.
And movies.
That's amazing.
Every weekend.
Yeah.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it was just like a surprise. But we ended up, he ended up going out of business because, not even because of Netflix, because he's a terrible businessman. He's a moron in certain ways. I love my dad. He's amazing. He's hilarious. And he's actually really smart. He's almost like an idiot savant.
Okay.
I don't even know if people use that term anymore. But he knows like every Jeopardy question.
Oh.
But if you ask him to
amazing.
Run a business or like manage finances, it's like he short circuits.
Right.
He's like, and he can't do it. But so eventually it closed because mostly, I would say even split, Netflix and my dad.
Okay. Like,
technology is as dangerous to a business as my dad is. But once, you know, videotapes and DVDs weren't being rented anymore, he got edged out. But why was I talking about this? The sound stages.
Oh, yeah.
And then the AI voice stuff.
Yeah.
So I never in a million years would have thought that what I'm doing is absurd. Like, the fact that I've ever even made money off of it is beyond idiotic. But
it's a service.
It is. I never thought it would be a replaceable service because it's human to human interaction.
Yeah, that's what they've come for first. The whole idea was that AI couldn't replace creatives, and that's literally the first thing they're replacing.
Yeah
My brother's he's a resident right now at NYU Langone, and he's a radiologist, and that's like basically computer generated stuff, but a doctor has to read
it.
That. And so he's like, everyone was saying when he was at that age where AI is coming in, you know, and he was studying, people were like, aren't you afraid of being replaced? He's like, not really. A doctor's going to have to read it. But that's who they were saying should be scared. No one was coming to us being like, aren't you scared? You're going to be replaced as a comic or a dating coach.
Right.
Like, but that's who's being replaced.
Yeah. I'm just banking on dying before it takes over.
Yeah, or having it kill us.
Yeah.
It'll turn against us.
My fingers are crossed for both. Like, one or the other. I just don't want to live in that world. I mean, I don't want to live in this world. Of course, no one wants to live in this world. But, like, if it was 1980, I would still be like, get me out of here. So let alone now. Like, the world's horrific.
It might get better, though, because if AI just does all the jobs and they give us, like, a standard paycheck or whatever that is, that they're thinking of doing that Andrew Yang idea, wouldn't be so bad, I guess.
Yeah. Is that like communism?
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. Except it's like the best version, because communism, everyone has to work, and then you go to like a gulag
right.
to eat.
This, is no
this way
work.
No one works right, and right, just the right, robots right. take over.
It's always funny how gulag, did you ever eat goulash growing up? Have you ever heard
is
of that?
Is that like, I've heard of it, but I don't think I've eaten it.
I think it's like elbow noodles with meat, like just like ground beef. I think
that sounds pretty good. It's like, I wouldn't mind that. I think I have had that.
Really?
I do. I actually think I have, because I have. It's like, I'm half Jewish.
I was going to say, you're too, even just being half Jewish is too Jewish to eat goulash.
Well, but I feel like that's like a Hungarian, there are a lot of Hungarian Jews. I feel like that's like a...
Yeah, it sounds hefty.
It does.
Yeah.
So I think maybe I have. It just sounds like Hamburger Helper.
It is kind of, I think.
I never had Hamburger Helper. I always wanted to as a kid.
We never had it either.
Yeah.
I was like, I wish my mom would be lazy and just like get a bag of this stuff so
it
I can finally
amazing.
Try it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But whenever I heard goulash and gulag, like they were the same thing to me. And they're both, I mean, one is obviously better than the other. I think some noodles and meat is better, but they're both pretty bad choices.
Yeah, I still am not sold that gulag is bad or goulash is bad. I think it might be good.
Yeah, most likely is good.
I've had some version of that at least, like something with macaroni and I feel like that's like shepherd's pie, but there's no pasta in it.
Yeah. Jorge, could you look up the recipe for goulash? This is
it's important.
If I have a producer, I'm going to take advantage of him both looking things up and sexually. So
yep.
We have the sexual one planned for later.
The tides have turned. Mm-hmm. Women are now in control, taking advantage.
So we were talking before the show about therapy. And you're not a proponent of therapy. And I do a lot of therapy. And I'm the perfect example of why you're probably not supportive of therapy. So, I mean, I agree with you, but I do it. But, like, I want to hear your, I don't know, argument.
Reasons against it.
Yeah.
I'm not fully against it. I mean, I get that it's useful for a lot of people. But
do you think it's actually useful for people, or do you think they just think it's useful?
I'm not sure. I mean, the idea of paying someone to listen to your problems and thinking they're not going to be swayed in one direction because they're getting a paycheck is weird. The whole concept is very strange. And my experience with it, when I was a kid, I grew up with divorced parents. And then my mom remarried basically twice. And my dad had a wife he stayed with, and then they had a kid, and then they fostered a Cambodian girl. So life was different than most people's, but it was just kind of what we knew.
Yeah.
You know, but my stepmother was a huge proponent of therapy and was like, we have to make sure everyone's okay with everything. We have to go to therapy as a family. We have to go to individual therapy. And this was early before like the whole thing had really caught on. And the thing is, like, and I feel bad. I don't know that she would ever listen, because we get along fine now. We didn't get along great growing up. But I always felt like she just was mean, and she needed, because the family knew she was mean, so she needed someone else to tell her she wasn't.
Right.
So she like paid someone to be like, oh, she's not.
But
so
there's also something that can get planted into your mind if someone says you need to go to therapy. So it
something is wrong.
Feels like something's wrong with me. So maybe it takes away from her appearing so mean, because maybe I'm oversensitive since I need therapy.
Right.
Or however you would.
It's also just weird because whatever the problems are, how is some stranger going to come and help anything?
Yeah.
And I was a kid. I was like, this is not how I want to spend my time. And as an adult, I feel the same way. It's like, I basically, if I'm depressed or get upset or frustrated or whatever's going on, I can like sit down and figure out why and probably find a way to help or not if I don't want to. But sitting and talking to somebody, and like everyone's had fucked up stuff in their past, and everyone, it's like, I know people who think they were loved too much and that hurt them. And then people who weren't loved enough and that hurt them. And like the I mean, this is extreme now, but this kid who shot up a school and his mom is now basically getting blamed. She's going to prison. it's bizarre to me because you have kids that get the shit kicked out of them by their friends and their family and have the worst life and they don't shoot up a school. So, you know, humans are resilient and they're fucked up and they're going to behave how they're going to behave. And it's good to help people, but there's plenty of people in therapy who are more fucked up than people who aren't in therapy. So I don't really know what it accomplishes except making people feel okay with their fucked up behavior, which another part of that is everything is diagnosed now, like all this kind of behavioral stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, guess what? People are assholes. And when you start giving them diagnoses where it's like, oh, well, the reason is because they're bipolar or they have multiple personality disorder right. or whatever any of these are, I'm like, they're just assholes. Like, right. they know what they're doing.
Right.
If their brain is programmed to be more likely to do that than someone else's, okay. But I mean, I don't know how that helps anything.
Yeah. I mean, I've done so. I mean, I never thought I would say this as a young person. As a person before I ever had to face the world.
Yeah.
When I was like 16, I never would think I would do therapy. Actually, I think I probably had said this on the podcast at some point, but I had two girlfriends in high school, and that's it. I only had two girlfriends. I really only did. Everyone else hated me. But
did they really? Or were you just
bullied.
Shy?
I was bullied.
Oh, in high school?
Yeah, and when I
thought
was in
when you were
school.
Elementary. I didn't know it went through high school.
Yeah, yeah. I switched schools in high school.
Oh, wow.
Because it was that bad.
Okay, so actually, I mean, in a situation like that, but you actually had a really supportive family life.
I did.
Because I was going to say, in the absence of a supportive family life there, I would probably actually be more of a proponent of therapy.
Yeah. I mean, the word therapy was never uttered in our house.
Yeah.
Ever
I mean,
once.
It's a pretty new kind of phenomenon.
Yeah. And my parents, my mom's not here, but my dad never in a million years would ever say therapy. Like, I've talked to him about problems. He's like, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
You just got to go through it.
It's part of life. You gotta take a nap or listen to some music. Yeah.
Yeah. He was like brought up in the 50s on a farm where he drove fast cars and you would be made fun of if you talked about your problems.
And on top of that, that generation was pretty successful without a lot of therapy.
Yeah.
There's
not a lot of mental cases I've come across from that generation.
Yeah.
That the boomer generation, they get so much hate and it bothers me so much. Like, a comic recently tweeted something like, we can all agree that at least it will be great that grocery lines will be shorter once boomers are all gone. And I just got so pissed.
Yeah.
So it was like, yeah, really, the world really turned into a great place. Like, once we buried my mom.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just it, like, they're not a horrible generation overall.
And I don't even know that people believe that. Once it's out there in the ether, people just keep repeating it.
Well, I was out with this guy recently, and we actually got into a heated debate about boomers.
Okay.
I hate even using the term boomer.
Yeah.
He unmatched me. Like, we didn't speak. He unmatched me. I mean, I was going hard back and forth with him about the boomer thing, and he's so anti-boomer, wants them gone.
I didn't know people were that angry about it.
Yeah.
My God.
He's like, why do you think we can't afford houses? And I do understand.
Work harder.
Right, I know.
Because you're a dumbass.
You're an artist in Brooklyn.
Yeah, you think your parents
idiot.
Would have afforded it if they
right.
lived that life at that age?
Right.
There's a path to things.
Yeah. But I understand, I'm reasonable. But in terms of therapy, I never would have thought I would have ever gone. And the first time I went to a psychiatrist, I didn't tell my parents that I was 25 or 26.
Okay.
I did go to a school in college. I went to a school psychiatrist because I started getting depressed in college. And I didn't really do much with that. Like, she put me on an antidepressant for 2 weeks. And my whole thing was I felt like I was getting depressed partly because I was getting fat, I was gaining weight.
Oh.
And then with the antidepressant, it was all in my head, I'm sure. But I just felt bloated on it. And then I started getting more freaked out and more upset or depressed. And so then I stopped the antidepressant. So that was not really a thing. So I didn't go until I was 25 or 26. And they were going to put me on medication. And I told my parents. And they were like, do not. Like, they were so anti. And they're not anti-medication. My mom would pop aspirin, every day, and she, She would give me like a little Xanax here and there if I needed it. She would only take tiny, tiny, tiny quarters of it like once every month or something like that.
Okay.
So we weren't anti-medication, but anti like psychologically
altering
your
who
brain.
Who you are. Yeah. Yeah.
They were.
And
adamant.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, at least that was at an age where your brain was fully formed. But, yeah. Because they do that to kids now, which is really crazy, I think.
But. Yeah, I can't imagine as a kid. But what was funny is I went on the medication and I didn't tell them. And my cousin was getting married in Florida. And so all of the family was down there and we were laying out at the pool. And I broke out into the craziest hives.
Oh.
And I thought at first it was the sun. But it was the medication. I could never get away with anything with my parents. Not that I even tried.
That's hilarious. I thought you were going to say the opposite. I thought you were going to say you were secretly taking the medication and your parents were like, this is the most amazing person you've ever been.
No, I was just as miserable, just with hives. So I was doing nothing.
Even worse. Yeah.
I was just miserable with hives. So I couldn't hide it from them. You know, like I've never had an allergic reaction to the sun in my life. So I went off of that and then went on to something else. But anyway, I've been on a whole journey of therapy and I see it in one way as totally counterproductive because it just allows you to drag on and on and on about your problems and talk in circles without solving anything because the majority of therapists that I saw just listened.
Yeah.
And some people might need that. But I had like my mom that would listen and maybe you or something. But like, you know, it wasn't that I needed to talk about things. I needed an action plan.
Yeah, you needed a solution.
Right.
Yeah.
And so.
Which isn't always medication. And that's what they jump to a lot.
Right. So, but if you're just seeing a therapist, you can't.
Prescribe like a psychologist.
It.
Yeah.
I always love, I'm going to say subscribe, like I'm subscribing to Adderall or whatever. My subscription I need to renew. So just recently though, so I have a friend, and I don't think she'll listen to this, but she does like so much therapy. It's almost like her religion. It's just like going to therapy, like a different form every day.
That's kind of a thing now, I think. Yeah, that people get that into it. And people also are like, I don't want to be around other people who aren't at least somewhat into therapy. Like they're so concerned with people working on themselves.
Yeah, and it almost feels a little bit cult-like.
Yeah.
But she did introduce me to her therapist. And I was like, I'm so far gone. I'll join a cult. It's fine. Like I've hit the point where cults are necessary.
They look good.
Yeah. And I haven't had Kool-Aid since I was really little.
I just found out it wasn't Kool-Aid. It was like Flavor-Aid. They didn't even spend on the good stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That when they killed themselves, it wasn't actually Kool-Aid.
It was like the knockoff version.
Off-brand suicide?
Yep. It's like, come on. If you're going out, why are you going to go out like that? At least get the good stuff.
Well, at least they did good advertising for Kool-Aid.
I did. Yeah, exactly.
So, I would totally drink it now. But my friend told me about this type of therapy that I'm actually doing now, and it's called IFS therapy.
Is that the ketamine stuff?
No, I did ketamine. I tried ketamine, and that didn't do anything for me. But that's kind of a long story. I didn't do 6 sessions. You're supposed to do 6.
Oh, okay.
I just think that I don't think if I did 6, anything would have helped.
You could probably tell off of one if it was going to be successful.
Yeah, it wasn't going to work. So, so right now I'm doing IFS, which is called Internal Family Systems. And I just thought that meant like for families that were messed up.
Yeah.
I'm like, my family is kind of normal. I don't really think IFS would be my thing. And then I Googled it, and what it really means, I think, is basically your own inner family. Like, the different parts of you that make up your whole is your family.
Okay.
And, of course, this was started in, like, the 70s. Like, the guy was clearly smoking pot.
That he's like, I just had a deep conversation with my kidney, and it's not communicating well with my liver. We need to,
Right. It's like, you're kidding me, kidney. I don't know. That was really lame. So, but I've done now, I think, 3 or 4 sessions. And it's actually the most in-depth therapy I've ever done because he's actually getting to the root of things.
Oh, interesting.
And
how?
Like with a shovel.
Like
I don't
but
know.
But I mean, it's, is he making you do like old memories? It's like that kind of getting to
kind
the...
of, yeah. Because like with all the other therapists that I've had, it was just me talking, and then I would kind of tell them this part about me when I was a kid, like the cliche things and stuff. But they would just kind of like nod and go, uh huh, and just let me keep talking.
Right.
This guy, he's incredibly nice. And I can't imagine, like, he told me, he was basically like, because I feel like I'm so screwed up, but he basically kind of somewhat said, like, you're the most normal patient I've worked with, which I didn't know was like insulting or of a compliment. Like,
I mean, that's definitely a compliment, I would think.
But if I'm in the community, I want some street cred.
Yeah.
You know, I've got the podcast. It's like,
you're like,
really,
I can work harder. Right. I'll get more. Wait till next week.
I can be more messed up. Yeah. So what it is like it's working on different parts of yourself. And so he'll say, okay, I want to know more about this part. So like this past week, I was talking about how I said, like, the old me is dead. And the old me was basically like me before my mom died. Like the minute my mom died, I died.
Yeah.
And I've been very dramatic with my grief, but I've had complicated grief. It's been a very difficult, like, I've not done well with it. And I'm 3 years in, and you're similarly like year.
Yeah,
in.
But that's nothing you can measure. I mean, grief, some people get over it. Some people quickly, some people it takes a long time, some people never do. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
And that is a real thing. It's like, even if you know everyone's going to deal with death, obviously, especially with their parents, but it's part of you that really, yeah, dies with them.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And so he said, okay, well, I want to talk to that. Let's talk to that part of you.
Yeah.
So the part of you that died. And so you almost go into like it's not hypnosis, but he walks you through. And so you close your eyes. I don't know if you're even supposed to. I just do kind of automatically because he wants you to envision things. And he'll have you put your hand on whatever part of your body is feeling the most angst or where the pain is or what have you. So you're kind of sitting there and you have your eyes closed. And if I hadn't done therapy before, I'd be very uncomfortable doing this because you have to be really vulnerable.
Yeah.
But I'm like, so there's nothing left for me. It's basically like I've showed everyone my vagina, like what's the difference kind of thing. So he wants you to go deeper. And so he'll say, okay, where is this part of you? The part of you that died, where is she right now? And my first vision, and I was like, I don't know if this is morbid, but I was like, I just see her buried underground, like with a headstone, and like
her being you,
her being me, but it's
with
a part
your mom.
Of
yeah.
me. But it wasn't even really with my mom. It was like we focused really much just on me.
Okay,
like literally just me, this side of me dead and buried. And he was like, okay, can you stand next to her grave, and then can you talk to her, and can she come out? And so it's like it sounds really kind of cheesy, but it's actually getting deeper and deeper. And so like when she comes out, like he said, what does she look like? And I said, a corpse. Like she looks, and he's like, does she let her know we're not going to force her to do anything she doesn't want to do, but does she want to talk? Like, does she have anything to say? And then, so one part of me, the like anxious part of me, that's the new me.
Yeah.
Is talking to the old me, who is the non-anxious me, that's the dead me. And so he makes you have a conversation, and it's like you start to understand why you're doing things more so than I have ever understood before.
Wow. Okay.
So it's exposing, it's like these parts that like they call like that are in exile. So like my dead part is in exile.
Okay.
And then, I don't know, and then it goes into, like, there's certain parts that are called, like, the firemen or something, and that's, like, all the protective parts, and then, like, we have the goulash recipe, which is perfect timing. That's about as long as it takes to make goulash. I don't know.
I know that was the longest Google ever. That's...
Oh, wait, no, this is... Oh, no, it's not about a goulash. Okay, no, it's
this
about
is the parts.
Yes, awesome.
Okay,
thank
this
you.
Is way more apropos.
Thanks, Renee. Yeah, so the firefighter are the protectors... The manager helps you manage situations that are
This is literally like that cartoon that was so cute. Oh,
yes. I love that cartoon.
That was so cute with the happiness and the sadness and like the... I mean, this kind of makes sense because your brain is so complex. And so like different parts of your brain are responsible for different parts of your personality or like well-being or happiness.
Right.
So I don't know if this actually allows you to access those parts, but it sounds like it does or it feels like it does.
It feels just like you're kind of understanding where stuff is coming from. And then I don't really know where we go from there. Again, it's like my third or fourth session. But
And each one plays off the last? Like you can start where you had left off?
They're kind of one-offs.
Okay.
But I think I'm doing that because when we start the conversation, it's over Zoom, of course.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, everything is just like, because everything's just Zoom.
Yeah.
He's in like Iowa or something.
Okay.
So when we start the conversation, he just kind of checks in with me and sees how I'm doing. And so one day I'm, you know, feeling really anxious and another day I'm feeling more depressed or another day I'm feeling more grief or another day I'm feeling lost or whatever.
Right.
And so I'll kind of start on that path. And then they're all leading together. Like he'll talk about things that I've talked about in the past sessions.
Okay.
But they haven't been pulled together yet, you know, because it's so early on. But he is referencing things that I've said before and parts of me from before. But generally, it's kind of the theme that I'm opening with, he'll go with. And he'll say, okay, let's go with that. Let's focus on that. And let's go deeper with that or whatever. But it just, again, it's the most in-depth conversation I've ever had with a therapist, and it's like he's actually seeking to uncover and find things out, whereas a lot of my other therapists aren't really seeking, they're just listening.
Okay.
So
each time after therapy, do you feel better in a sense? Do you have like a
One of the times I actually really did, I felt like this entire weight was lifted off my shoulders. And he said, journal. He tells you to like journal after every time.
That kind of makes sense because you just forget. I mean, I would forget everything.
Yeah, because I actually right now as I'm saying it, I journaled about it, but I can't tell you what I was journaling about. I have to look back in my journal. And I don't know if that's because, you know, taking too much Klonopin or I'm getting old. Like, I don't know why I can't remember.
Yeah.
But when I did journal afterward that time, I felt not happy. I'll never admit to saying I feel happy. Like I get a little
like
trepidation.
Bursts of happiness at least, or you don't even feel ever.
Not now, no. Wow. I mean before
your mom died. You don't think you've had bursts of happiness?
Well, when I was dating a person.
And then you could get happiness within that.
Yeah.
You felt it at the time, you think, or just looking back, you think that you had happiness?
At the time in certain moments.
Okay.
And I think because I felt, and I obviously won't get really into it, but like I think because I felt like I'd like found my place, like I found where I belonged.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of, I think, my struggle with, and I hate to even say mental health because it's like, I don't even know if I have mental. It's like, I think I'm just like lost. It's like, I don't even know if I'm, I take antidepressants, but I don't even know if I'm technically clinically depressed. And
right.
That's why I think like ketamine doesn't work for me because I feel like it's somewhat situational. Like I'm highly sensitive. So if I'm in a situation that feels wrong or that I'm lost.
It just exacerbates that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then I did mushrooms.
You told me about that. Yeah.
Jeez. Have you ever done mushrooms?
I kind of. I did like maybe a little more than a microdose of it, and just stuff got really fuzzy, and I basically got sleepy.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
I was sobbing for 5.5 hours, curled up on
like
the floor.
Such a nightmare. Oh, God. And I know people who've had bad trips. I mean, I don't think it was mushrooms, though. I think it was like LSD or like straight acid. But oh, my God. Yeah, on the off chance that I was having bad thoughts anywhere in my body that day, I never want to exacerbate that.
Yeah, so
I get freaked out about that stuff.
Yeah.
But people love mushrooms usually, so that sucks. You had such a bad...
I know. Everyone's like, you got to do it. You got to do it. You got to do it. My friend mailed me them in the mail. I didn't even know you could do that.
I think now, who knows, or maybe you're on some list at this point.
I know. But it's like, you know, I think it's a time filler for a lot of people.
Yeah. Or it's their thing. It's like what you're saying. You feel lost and you need something, which you will find, you know, I don't know if it's career-wise or relationship-wise or just within yourself, but there's going to be something that fulfills you. You know, for the people who get fulfilled by mushrooms, that's what it is. It's like they're probably bored in life. They need this extra thing. I think drugs in general are like that. Like, because they can be amazing and they're fun, but I can't imagine doing them all the time. You have to have some reality that you enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, people say, you know, you'll go on a journey and you'll make so many discoveries and you'll see the world in a different way.
You'll talk to God.
And, yeah. And yeah. I mean, maybe... But, like, I at first I was thinking I would try ayahuasca.
Yeah.
But if I couldn't handle mushrooms, I couldn't.
Yeah. My brother's wife is going to Colombia, I think, this month. Or maybe she's already there to do ayahuasca. And she's, like, a very just normal, smart, intellectual. She's not, like, a, you know, Grateful Dead, whatever, hippie type.
Right.
So I'm so curious to see what her experience is.
Yeah.
Because I'm so used to listening to comics and every comic has talked to God and like it's the same story. I'm like, I don't know if this is just how we deal with ayahuasca. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm curious about that too. I'm scared of all that though.
Yeah. Because I, you know, you hear the stories of like people are like shitting themselves and vomiting. And, so if I'm shitting myself and vomiting and not getting anything out of it, you know, mental health wise.
Also, like, that's not really how I want to meet God.
No. And like, I can take a laxative if I really need to go that bad. Like,
I didn't know the shitting part, actually. I've only heard the throwing up, but that makes sense that it all happens, probably.
But I kind of understood it when I was on the mushrooms. And the mushrooms, I feel like an old lady. Like, turn on the Netflix, or I don't
hilarious.
Know. So, did I tell you? I don't know. I may have or may not have said, but on mushrooms, my body was basically seizing up because all of my thoughts were anxious.
Oh.
And with every anxious thought, it felt like electricity was running through.
Jeez.
My arm, like my whole body. So I was kind of seizing up, but I had my arms tucked like this. I was kind of in like fetal position. And I, what was I going to say? There was a point to this.
About, jeez.
I think it's the mushrooms that did it to me.
Something, yeah.
Oh, okay. I remember the throwing up part.
Oh.
So my whole body was seizing up and my friend came in who was trying to, she was like facilitating.
Guiding you.
Guiding,
yeah.
So she heard me. And I'm so, speaking of like neuroses, at first I was like, because I started crying, but I was like, don't cry loud because you don't want her to hear you. Like how embarrassing it'll be if she hears you just crying. So I was trying to cry quietly until I,
with God, the mushrooms. So horrible.
It was awful. But then the mushrooms took over where I could no longer be neurotic.
Okay.
Like I wanted to be neurotic still, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
So she heard me weeping and sobbing. And so she came in and she was like, just spread out your body. Don't tense up. Like she said, starfish on the bed. And so I was trying to let my arms and legs just relax because I just wanted to seize up so much.
Yeah.
And so when I did, something in my body wanted to seize up. So the only thing that could seize up when I was laying in this relaxed position was my throat.
Oh, no.
So I started like gagging.
Because you were trying to throw up and your throat was seizing up or just seizing up?
No, the muscle was seizing up because no other muscle, I wasn't allowing other muscles to seize.
Yeah.
The only thing that, and it was so intense. It was like I couldn't help my throat. It just was on its own kind of doing like a kind of thing, which always annoys me.
Right.
People do like, these girls in high school would do it when they would see like a girl wearing an ugly skirt. They'd be like, and so I hate when people do that.
Oh, that's so
even
funny.
Even if you're actually going to puke.
Like, you're actually about to throw up and you're still like, oh, I hate myself.
Yeah. I'm such a bitch. Yeah. Did I just see an ugly skirt? Like, so I was feeling that. And then I realized, you know, during my trip or whatever, this is why people throw up during ayahuasca, but maybe not. But I started to understand for the first time.
Okay. That your body is physically
just
doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I would have been releasing anything. I think it was just my muscle needed something. So then eventually I just couldn't do that anymore with the.
And you just went back
to fetal. And I just went back to fetal on the floor. And I saw, it was so like cliche, like I saw an ant walking on the floor and the sunlight was shining in and there were strands of hair and it was getting, the ant was getting redirected by the strands of hair. And I was like, oh, we're all one. Look at this ant is so affected by strands of hair. And then the ant was on the, it was such a big wooden, big massive floor. And he was such a tiny, tiny ant, or uncle since he was a he. No, I'm just kidding. He looked so lost. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm the ant.
Oh, no.
I'm the ant. Like, it was just very... So I did have very mushroomy moments.
Yeah, I was going to say that is definitely what,
like a cliche.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. Except a lot of times it's better, I feel like. They see something good and they're like, oh, I'm that.
Of course.
You're like seeing the worst thing.
Yeah, I know.
And then someone stomps the ant and you're like, oh, no.
My guts are everywhere.
Oh, God.
Have you ever done any... psychedelic at all?
Well, no. I mean, I don't like pot. Not that that's a psychedelic. I get kind of paranoid. And then, yeah, I've done like...
I thought you said pot. Like, usually that would be my level of...
Yeah, I would think. But then the funny thing is, it's like I've done... Like, ecstasy is good. That's not really psychedelic. But I've never had a bad experience. But the next day doesn't feel great. That's me with drugs. It's like I can have fun doing them. But the next day... Same with drinking. I get so hungover. And mushrooms, I've never taken enough. I don't think that I've had a full experience.
Yeah.
I just tried once, like a little bit, and it tasted so bad. It was also not in like, you know, you can get chocolate or whatever now.
Chocolate.
Yeah. These were like, you just eat the mushrooms and they were disgusting.
Yeah, it's horrible.
So.
No salad dressing or anything.
Yeah. That would help if there was something.
Good dip.
I should try. I mean, that's the thing. It's like LSD, especially people like Steve Jobs said, it changed his outlook on life.
Yeah.
But I'm worried I would just have a bad trip.
Yeah, but they end. You know, it was like, I kept telling myself.
This will be over.
This will be
How
over.
How long did it take?
It was about 5.5 hours. And then I was just beat afterward. I was exhausted.
Yeah, I would sleep for like 3 days.
Yeah. And like, especially from my muscles seizing up for 5.5 hours, I just physically felt exhausted. But the next day I woke up and I was actually irritated because, well, I am irritated whenever I wake up. But I was feeling kind of okay. And then when I woke up the next day, and I mean before I did the mushrooms, because I went to this retreat thing in Austin, which was not by choice. Someone gave me a free ticket and then my friend forced me to go. Otherwise, I wouldn't have chosen to go. I'm like, I can't be a retreat person. Like, I can't be this low. So I was feeling kind of uplifted after the retreat. It was actually amazing.
Okay.
And so then the next day, my friend said, you know, well, you're here. You might as well do mushrooms. And it sent me into
all the way backwards.
The like, deepest depression. The next morning I woke up, I couldn't believe the difference I felt from the day before at the retreat to the day after the mushrooms. It was like I needed several days to kind of come back to life.
Yeah.
So I think whatever chemical, I don't know if it mixes with whatever antidepressant I'm on or whatever, like it just it depressed my brain so badly.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, well, the trip will end, but
the depression
will not. Yeah, like that.
Yeah, now we've hit a new level. Well, how did you find the new therapy that's working?
The friend that gave me the mushrooms.
Really?
Yeah.
I would never trust her again.
I know. It was amazing that I took it. That's how desperate I was.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay, fine.
She's like, what is that, Munchausen by proxy? She like made you super sick and then saved you.
Right. And she gets a profit from the
from
the
everyone,
therapist.
From both. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she gets a cut. So, okay. Any quirks that you have? Like anything that you're... like weird about like having to separate your food on a plate or, you know, having everything separate or.
I guess there's probably, but there's nothing I can think of. That's probably something someone else. I feel like I'm so laid back that even if I'm doing something quirky, I wouldn't realize that it's a quirk unless it was pointed out. And even then I'd probably be like, all right, I won't do that anymore. Like there's nothing that's a real trait that I need to do like OCD people that have.
Well,
you know, have to wash their hands 12 times or whatever.
Yeah. You have, it's interesting because you're interesting, but you don't feel quirky, which is a good thing. It's a good thing. Like, I don't ever think of like Allie, like, she's got these quirks. It's just like Allie is so easygoing and cool.
Yeah. Hopefully that's the case. There probably is something that drives people nuts. I mean,
sometimes it feels like people are hiding it. but you're hiding something, but you're not.
I mean, I have things that drive people nuts. That it's not a quirk. It's like asshole behavior. Like I'm late all the time.
Oh yeah,
that all the time. Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you're a celebrity like Gwyneth Paltrow, and Jennifer Connelly,
you can't
be late.
Us to show up on time, we make a fashionable entrance.
Why are you late all the time, though? I'm super late.
I actually think, and this is going to sound way off, but I don't think that it's some weird ingrained thing. It's like, because even when I do actually leave the time, I feel like the universe is working against me. Because even when I try really hard to be on time, it's such bullshit. When I try really hard, something happens and I'm still late. So I'm like, I don't understand how it is always. But the whole thing is, I guess people, you know, who are successful in life will be like, 10 minutes early is actually on time. Yeah. And if I'm trying to be on time, I'm actually trying to time it. When generally I know that I'm going to show up 5 or 10 minutes late, I just don't, it doesn't register.
I know. Those people are also the worst people ever. Like, you're late if you're not 10 minutes early.
Yeah.
Like those people.
And early people are a pain in the ass. People show up 15, 20 minutes, because I get ready in the last 10 minutes before I'm going to do something.
Right.
So it throws everything off if you're early.
Right.
That's way worse.
Not that I'm entertaining people because I have no home or anything, but like, you know, if you're having a dinner party or something and someone shows up 15 minutes early, then it's awkward. No one's there yet.
Awkward.
You're still doing the stuff for the thing. And then you have to like partly entertain and partly. So I'm never an early person because I know it's most likely going to inconvenience the other people.
Yeah.
But then I'm also always late and I'm not worried about that inconvenience.
Exactly.
But when I, like you said, you'll always end up late even if you're leaving on time. Same thing happens to me. But I realize that I do it to myself. So, like, for example, here, I drove in from upstate because I was home. And so I was like, well, I won't go home first. I'll just drive. Like, I won't go to Williamsburg. I'll just go straight to here. So I parked my car at 12:30. And I was just hanging out in my car. And I was like, I have so much time to kill. But I knew I was hungry. So I was like, well, I'll find somewhere. And, of course, I didn't leave myself enough time. I only walked in here, like, 2 minutes late. But I got here an hour early.
Yeah.
And I had to be 2 to 3 minutes late.
Actually, that is a thing that happens now that I think about it. When I get to a place early, I kind of do the same thing. Like, I get anxious about showing up, I guess, at the place.
Yeah. And it's like, I also don't want to go. Is it like that you don't want to go partly?
A lot of times, probably. Yeah. And then in my head, I know usually it's fine or fun even when I show up somewhere. But I do that thing where I wait, even if I'm early, till the last minute to actually get into the, you know, through the door of wherever. So I end up being late for that reason, too. Also, like, just timing things. I think I hate, and this, once again, it's just an asshole quality because you make people wait when you're late. But I hate waiting. And so even at an airport, I want to walk in
and
through security and onto the plane.
Yeah.
So I'll miss flights and wait for the next one. And that still seems better somehow than the prospect of like waiting an hour to make sure that I get on the flight that I need.
I feel like that's going to save your life at some point when the plane goes down that you were supposed
probably.
To be on. That will come in handy.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we probably don't have too much time left. So I just want to, since we're, it's funny, it's amazing, like, being assholes, but then talking about etiquette and like how you should act.
Oh, wait, let me just add this before. Yeah. That's the other thing I hate when people do show up late and they're like, I'm sorry, I'm an asshole. It's like, we know that doesn't excuse the behavior.
Right.
Like the fact that you're pointing, which is exactly what I'm doing now, basically pointing it, like, pointing out that you're being an asshole doesn't help the situation, even though a lot of people think, oh, that makes it better. It's just my quirky assholeness.
Yeah, it definitely makes it worse. So this one I texted you yesterday. What is, so I don't know, I want to like call this like a segment, but it's etiquette, but it's like useless etiquette. It's not like proper fork, knife, spoon, you know, dinner fork thing.
Right.
It's more like everyday annoyance type of etiquette. What's the most polite way to ignore someone in an elevator?
Yeah, that one was weird. Why would you ever talk to anyone in an elevator to begin with? I was like, that's the weird part. Like, ignoring is easy.
Oh, you think the ignoring is easy?
Yeah.
See, I think it's uncomfortable.
Oh, you feel like you need to talk to someone when you're in the elevator with them?
Not talk, but recognize that another person is there.
Oh, I'm the opposite. I'm like, get in, stand there, wait for your floor. Unless
they say
something.
Do you feel uncomfortable? Like, do you feel an odd, like, eyeball staring at the back of your head, burning a hole into it?
No.
You don't?
I mean, if they say something, and I've tried to get better about not being bitchy, because sometimes when someone just talks in a weird situation like that, if they're like, oh, you know,
the weather.
Yeah, I'll be like, uh-huh, and like act like my earbuds. But I'm like, why would I be an asshole to someone just trying to make small talk? So I'll be friendly if they're friendly, but I never would talk first.
Okay,
and
so
I don't
you
feel
don't
the need
initiate.
At all. No.
Okay. Because I'm stuck always between the look, because if you walk on and someone's on the elevator, you make eye contact, you know, kind of thing. And there's that, we all know that grin, like the nod, like,
yeah.
Like a coworker you're not really into and you're walking by in the hallway kind of grin.
Yeah.
So you give them that kind of grin.
A little nod, yep.
But then just both standing there knowing you both exist and not saying a word. And I'm not for small talk. Like, I'm not for making conversation. But that 30 seconds or however long it is, my heart starts racing.
Oh, that's so funny.
Because I'm so aware that they're aware that we're both here and we're not
saying a
word. No one's saying
anything. What about, like, do you ever do Uber Share?
I used to, but not
anymore.
Not anymore.
Okay, because I was going to say that's a weird one, too, where you get in the car and no one acknowledges anybody. It's weird behavior. You're right, to not acknowledge anyone, but I'm so on board with it.
Yeah,
and I don't feel weird.
I am, too, but I have to
you
go through the
weird
phase first. Like, when I sit down on an airplane and, like, my seatmate or whatever is right there, I'll do the grin, and I'll kind of get the vibe, and I don't want to talk. I don't.
Yeah.
But if they want to talk, I don't want to be rude. You know, so I try to put out the, hey, I'm open to talking vibe, but I'm not going to start the conversation. But, you know, so obviously the pulling out the cell phone is the way to ignore people.
Well, now it's earbud. Like, I used to do this a lot more often and I shouldn't. But like when someone says something and you hear them clearly, but I'll be like, huh? Like, so that they really are aware, like, this is annoying.
Yeah.
But that's not helping.
The huh is a good indication, though. When someone does that, you do know you're annoying them.
Yeah.
With my hair, generally I wear it down. Like, if I'm doing stand-up, I pull it back. But you can't ever see my earbuds or AirPods. I'm so old. I don't know what they are.
We know. I think I was calling them the wrong thing.
But you can't see. Like, if we were wearing these headphones walking around.
That's probably why people actually do wear these.
I know. Right.
Pair them.
Right. Even, like, earmuffs. Like, instead of a hat, I'll just put earmuffs on, because even those look like, you know, of course, they're somewhat blocking your ear hole.
The odd thing is, too, a lot of times in the city, when you do have, like, a quick exchange with someone, it is nice.
Like, yeah, they're generally pleasant.
Yeah, and so I don't know why I'm so anti, but yeah, I'm generally, like, eyes straight ahead, don't feel bad. If someone does talk to me, I'll definitely try to be nice, which for some reason, I've gone through phases where I'm really not at all, where everything is annoying.
Yeah.
But I never feel pressure to be the first to talk.
Yeah. Well, with neighbors and things, like, I tweeted this a long time ago. It was I would die if my neighbor talks to me, but also how dare they not say hello?
Yeah.
Like, I get super offended. Like, in the neighborhood I grew up in, nobody says hello to each other. I've lived in that neighborhood my parents lived there for 30 plus years.
Oh, see, the whole cliche is that those neighborhoods, people do talk to each other and know people.
Not in this neighborhood, the town, it's just like a personality-less town and everyone's just like cold and awful.
Oh, wow.
But it's like, I don't want to say hello, but how dare you not, asshole. But it's the same with like the elevator. So the other day in my building, I know you're in an elevator. No, you're in a stairs building. No, there's
no
an elevator.
It is an elevator, yeah.
I was in the elevator the other day and I walked on, and when I walked on, I just did a grin. I didn't want to talk. I did a grin, but the guy looked at me and didn't grin back. Ugh. And I was like, what a dick. All right.
Yeah.
So then when he was leaving, he got off before me and he didn't like do like a side,
have a
like,
nice day,
like little
or
grin
anything.
Anything. And so, I mean, I was like such a child and obviously I knew he wasn't seeing me, but I went like jerked off and like made a face.
Oh my God. I love that ability, though. It feels so good to do something behind someone's back like that.
I had no idea. And I was like, you fucking prick. Like, because he didn't even, I don't want to talk. Just acknowledge with a little face thing. We're both standing in a tiny box together and life is weird.
Yeah.
But I don't want to talk.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I want to ignore a person in an elevator. So like when I asked you the question, it wasn't like, how do you like not talk to them? It's more like, how do you properly not talk to them without offending them?
Yeah, the elevator is the one situation I feel like everyone's already programmed that you're going to stand there awkwardly with a bunch of people and that no one is going to talk.
Yeah.
So I never think that feels like a weird pressure situation. But I might be the weird one. Maybe everyone else does feel that
way. No, I mean, especially in New York, it's like the pressure to talk is not there.
Yeah.
But it's funny when someone walks out of an elevator, for some reason I still kind of do the, oh, like I get surprised. Like it's not a box that carries
when it
people.
Opens up and people are in there.
Like, yeah. I'm always, I have this weird element of surprise and I feel like a dweeb every time. But I'm like, oh.
The weird part is when someone does that, especially at an airport or something, and they pause, like the door opens, and, and you have to start walking in before they walk in. It's like, were you going to live here? Did you not think you had to leave?
It's a really small couch, but it actually kind of looks good. All right. Well, I think I've probably annoyed Jorge long enough. Thank you so much, Allie, for doing
the show. Yeah, thanks for having me. That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. Do you have any shows coming up? I hate doing this like plug thing because it's like no one's listening.
I know.
So it's like,
no,
who are we plugging to? Like, it's so disingenuous.
Just Instagram, I guess, is the best. I never even know when this is going to be released. Does it go right out?
It'll be like next week or
There might be shows. Yeah. They can follow me on Instagram if they really want to.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening. If you guys want to watch live streams, you should. And follow me on Patreon. And if you, I don't know, have any ideas for like etiquette things, because I kind of already am like two shows in. I'm like, what else do I talk about for etiquette?
The well-ran dry.
Yeah. DM me those at Chris Karn on Instagram. All right. Thanks for listening. And I'll see you guys on the live stream. Bye.